Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Objection with an exclamation point, the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. And we are said contrarian a-holes, David Johnson here and Dan Mancini here on my right, or my left.
Greetings.
Yeah, left or right, I'm not sure.
It is like crossfire.
It is like crossfire.
On your left.
So we are in the guts of our countdown. That's, in fact, we're really approaching the halfway point, right, Dan?
Yeah, after this week, we hit the top 10.
Ah, that's going to be exciting. So this is, of course, our countdown of 20 action movies loathed by Prius enthusiasts. So again, we apologize. If you own a Prius and you take offense to this, please feel free to lodge your complaint with the Old White Man Cabal, and they can be found at facebook.com/oldwhitemen. They have a great customer service department. You know, so
they do.
I mean, they've really done well, so they'll get back to you immediately.
It's located in Bangalore, and they pay them like a nickel an hour, but still.
And while they're doing customer service, they're building Matchbox cars. So, I mean, that's – the Old White Man Cabal is also very resourceful. So,
yes.
And I guess we need to – just for full disclosure, yes, this entire countdown is being subsidized by a grant from the Old White Man Cabal. So, what is an action movie as loathed by a Prius enthusiast? What do we mean by that? Well, some ingredients would be a hero who is proactive, not a reactive little douche who accidentally hurts people and kills people and takes out the bad guy. He is someone who is he or she. We're not sexist here. We're a-holes, but we're not sexist. Someone who takes the fight to the bad guys and doesn't let the action come to him. What else did you add, Dan? What other ingredients are in this countdown?
Let's see. What else do we have? Communism can be identified as an evil.
Well, really, you know, any kind
bad
of
guy can be communist.
Any kind of real foe, you know, given a real name,
yeah.
So,
yeah. Any foe that is not European neo-Nazis.
That's right. That's true. Again, that is why the Old White Man Cabal has been really supportive of this podcast. They feel they've been given a bad shake over the years. So, the CIA is another example, the CIA, they don't necessarily have to be the villains in every single, action movie ever made. But it's probably more an art than a science. You know, it's it when you see it, right? You sit down,
right.
You see an action movie. It's like, yeah, that would be loathed by a Prius enthusiast or embraced by a Prius enthusiast. So it is more art than science. And we hope as we plow through our countdown here, that becomes more clear. But before we get rolling with numbers 12 and 11, right? Is that what we're on?
12 and 11.
Before we get rolling, because we are not oblivious to feedback, there was an excellent post in the DVD Verdict Jury Room, which is our forums, which you are obviously welcome to post that and make your thoughts heard. There was by user Mach6, and he had taken issue with our inclusion of They Live in our Halloween countdown. And I've got it open right here, and he thinks they don't belong in the loathed by the Prius enthusiast countdown. I'll read this real quick, and just to show you that we do listen. So here's his contrarian a-hole point here. While evil aliens and not the military, CIA, Cricket FBI agents, etc., are the main bad guys, look who's helping them. Greedy, rich humans. Those soulless yuppies and corporate CEOs don't care if the aliens are stealing all our resources. They only care about looking out for themselves, making a profit, and sticking to the poor. In other words, capitalists are evil. Prius owners would really hate the aliens because they're destroying our environment. During the Resistance Pirate TV broadcast, it mentions that they're affecting Earth's atmosphere and raising the temperature to make it more like their planet. Forget stealing our resources, the aliens are contributing to global warming. I don't want to get too political, but to me, John Carpenter used They Live to take a few over-the-top shots at Reagan's trickle-down policies, where in a Prius owner's mind, the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. And then They Live should still be considered awesome no matter what vehicle you own. So a well-articulated point. Response, Dan?
And very well articulated, and I think number one, we do not at all dismiss Mach 6.
No, of course not.
And the point, in large part, or at least in part, because his forum username is, I think, taken from a razor. That's pretty macho.
That is pretty macho. You know? And the root word of, you know, M-A-C-H is, can be found in the word macho. So, you know, we'll have to grant.
Yeah. But I think it does raise an interesting thing, which is that the assumption may be that we're just here to slam liberals.
Yes, that's.
But we don't have a problem with muscular liberalism.
Of course not.
A sort of Kennedy liberalism, which I would, to the extent that they live, is liberal. It's certainly a muscular liberalism. I don't think any of the characters in They Live would be driving around in a Prius.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, really, I would, even though we probably come across, I mean, I don't think we try to be apolitical. This isn't something you would label yourself in a Rasmussen survey or something. I think, again, it's more art than science. I think you've got to, you know, we're talking about the kind of mamby-pamby, nuance-obsessed, Happy Meal toy banning, you know, folks who probably right. not, you know, and there's plenty of people on either side of the spectrum would probably, you know, say, yeah, I like those kinds of action movies where it's brawny and proactive and kinetic and testosterone-y, and that's great. So I don't think, yeah, so we're not cordoning off people into political groups here. So, you know, that's probably our little preamble, but again, don't, you know, Prius enthusiasts, whatever they may be.
Yeah, I don't see a Prius enthusiast looking at Rowdy Roddy Piper in that movie with his mullet and his flannel shirts and everything and rippling muscles.
That's true. And again,
and enjoying that and saying, "Yeah, man, this is my kind of."
And again, the biggest thing would be also it is not a movie that endorses multiculturalism in the least. So,
yeah. It's very pro Western civilization,
and dare I say, anti-illegal immigration too.
Yes,
I mean,
just a bit.
Yeah, I think. So anyway, excellent point though by Marksix. Thank you very much, and please feel free to all listeners. Feel free to comment as we charge forward. But anyway, let's enough of the mailbag. Let's move on to the countdown. We have a special guest. Emphasis on special. That is Steve Power. Yeah, welcome.
I have my mouth full. I'm enjoying my plate of testosterone and bolognese.
Good. What do you mean, bolognese? Yes, Steve Power definitely is one of our go to guests on Objection. He's kind of like the Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live for us. You know, he's like omnipresent here. But that's because. He's got some good things to say, and I think we've got a couple movies that are right up his alley, and I'm sure we will hear from him in the future because we're going to be dwelling on stuff that I know he loves dearly, which is nice, even because I tend to think Steve, you know, can tend to be out of his mind sometimes with his movie tastes, but not this time.
Which is a sign that his contrarian a-hole credentials are
impeccable.
Are unmatched. Yes. Yeah, impeccable.
Yes. And I keep having him come back because Dave promises that he's going to release that tape of me yelling at my girlfriend or yelling at my daughter on her cell phone to the public if I don't.
All right. So let's just keep going. So, Dan, we're doing 12 and 11 here. So let's take a look at movie number 12 in our action movies as loathed by praise enthusiasts.
Yes. One of the fine finest action movies of the 1990s, wouldn't you?
I think so. And probably the greatest on-screen representation of a mustache.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that there's been some great screen mustaches.
Of course.
So that's
But this is where, I mean, this, like the mustache deserves its own credit, I think, you know, in this case. It is that imposing. But yeah, definitely. And a movie, one of those movies that, again, it's easy to get sucked back into and just rewatch. And it's one of those things where, you know, just around the corner, something awesome is coming. So it's impossible not to keep watching, whether you even see it in your aspect ratio destroyed full frame TV version or your Blu-ray/DVD. There's really no way to get out of its lure once it grabs your eyeballs, I think.
No, great cast, great action. And we're talking, of course, about 1992's Tombstone.
Yes, Tombstone, starring Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, and like 1,000 other people that you recognize.
Who are all awesome.
Who are all awesome. Yes. Absolutely.
Starring Val Kilmer's mustache, Russell's mustache, Powers Booth's mustache.
So many fantastic. Did Michael, was Michael Biehn sporting a mustache too?
I think he was.
I think so, yeah. Paxton.
Paxton, yes.
Paxton's mustache.
Oh, man. I mean, I think even, what's your face? China Beach.
Billy Bob Thornton.
China Beach may have had a mustache. The girl from China Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an epic. I mean, again, this is one of the movies where I've seen it so many times, and then I'll watch it again and notice someone else recognizable. Like, you know, hey, Thomas Hayden Church is in this movie, you know?
Uh-huh. With a mustache.
Yes. Well, that's Jason Priestley. Hey, and my latest one, which I never put together, was, wow, that's friggin' Stephen Lang, you know?
Yep. As Ike Clanton.
As Ike Clanton.
With a mustache.
With a mustache.
With a mustache.
And his shoulder not on
his
fire.
His shoulder not on fire. And his spray tan not completely overtaking his body. So, so much star power, and, you know, and thankfully, it's not like Ocean's 13 star power. You know, this is like, you know, everyone's come together not to just hang around and eat shrimp or something. This is, they're all in to make a badass Western in a dusty locale.
I think one of the criteria that has to be added is there's no Julia Roberts.
There is no Julia Roberts. Yeah. That's true.
That should be the rule. You know, that should be one of the criteria for films that are hated by previous owners.
Right. I'm looking at our list. I think we're clear of that. Yeah. Yes,
and in 1992, that's a big deal because there were very few films made in 1992 that didn't have Julia.
And that was, and I think that was like a UN statute too. Like there was X amount of percentage of films had to include Julia Roberts in 1992. So Tombstone, Steve, why don't you kick us off? Why is Tombstone so very badass?
The dialogue, I think, more than anything else, you know, just some of the one-liners that come out of Kurt Russell in that movie. It's, I don't know, from the moment you see him with the whole, you're going to do anything, you just stand there and bleed. You know, like, it's awesome. And you tell him I'm coming and hell's coming with me. It's just, I don't know, it's got all of those, you know, the red meat chewing, hated by Prius owners kind of feel of an 80s action movie. But it goes one beyond. It takes just that flying leap beyond being just a great action movie by setting it in the American Wild West.
That's right.
See, you got the best of both worlds. I mean, you got the dusty, six-shooting Wild West movie combined with, like, you know, something that could have only come from George P. Cosmatos, the director of First Blood Part 2, you know?
Definitely. And it's, and you've populated it with iconic characters, you know, from the American Mythos.
Well, it was part of an Aliens reunion. I want, like, half the cool guys from Aliens were in it. And, yeah, of course, Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer, who were also, you know, in their heyday. Well, and Russell still, but Kilmer in his heyday were both very badass guys. And, you know, they were very badass in this movie. It's just, from top to bottom, a pure fun guy flick. And it never slows down. It just keeps rolling.
Yeah. How about you, Dan? Your Tombstone thoughts?
Well, for me, Kurt Russell is my favorite action hero of the 80s. Between, you know, The Thing and Escape from New York and
Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China, and then Tombstone. And here's the thing about Tombstone, too.
And then Tango and Cash, right? Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash.
Rambo was a pussy.
Here's the thing about his deal in Tombstone, though, is unlike Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, Kurt Russell in Tombstone proves that he is so much of a man that he can actually succeed in being the leading man and being a bigger man than Sam Elliott.
Which is no small feat, right?
No. I mean, Swayze fails miserably in Roadhouse.
He does.
Just totally outmanned by Elliott, who's just, you know, I mean, Elliott's mustache is more of a man than most of us, let's face it. But, man, Kurt Russell pulls it off.
And, you know, and outside of Mad Mardigan, this is my favorite Val Kilmer role too, I think. You know?
Yeah,
it's one of my favorites. So it's like he's got that's another testament to Russell. Like, he's just surrounded by these big name actors with like memorable characters, and you know, he's the main guy.
Right, and the word now is recently. I mean, Kurt Russell has come out and talked about this since George Cosmatos' death that Kurt Russell actually directed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That he had contacted Sylvester Stallone because he didn't want I can't remember what the deal was, but he didn't want some kind of hassle of being the official director. And Stallone said, you know, get Cosmatos because he'll ghost direct it for you.
Nice.
Like, you do whatever you want, you know, you'll call the shots and he'll just be there as a director by name only. And I can't remember what Stallone film was like that, whether it was Rambo 2 or what, but there was some Stallone film where Stallone actually directed it.
I believe it was Cobra.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Nice.
Which I just watched earlier today.
Oh, yeah, that most excellent final bad guy death scene in Cobra, I do believe, right? Yeah, getting carried into like
the hook getting carried into
like the furnace, blast furnace. Very nice.
Was that like Brian James, was it, or Brian Johnson, or Brian something Brian, big guy?
Yeah.
Used to be in the X-Files a lot.
yeah, exactly. It was that dude. Yeah, gets hung on a hook, Texas Chainsaw style, and run into a fire. That's awesome.
I always like the clanging
axes. Only challenged by the Rambo 3, you know, fall through the hole.
Grenade explosion simultaneous. Yeah.
Snap your neck.
Absolutely. Or the or let off some steam Bennett, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
talk about digressions. Just to...
I think the other thing with Tombstone, I think that's kind of crazy, is the movie very, very almost didn't happen because of Kevin Costner.
Oh, yeah. The Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, apparently Tombstone was originally with Costner, and they were going for a more realistic approach to it or whatever. And when Costner left Tombstone, he assumed the project was dead and started up Wyatt Earp. And then when they actually resurrected Tombstone, he really went out of his way to block it from happening altogether. Yeah, I believe it was the composer, like he blacklisted the composer in Hollywood, stuff like this, right?
Nice.
Yeah, it was interesting. And now, I mean, as a pure Western, I do kind of prefer Wyatt Earp, but just as an all-out action movie, I mean, Tombstone comes off my shelf a lot more than Wyatt Earp does.
Now, yeah, for me, it's...
a long haul.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing those. Like, those are the two VHS tapes I'd see for rental, and I always just ignore it. But, you know, when they use the packs of the two VHS tapes. For me, Tombstone is just, again, you're talking of, you know, one of our criteria is, you know, hey, these are heroes. They don't let things happen to them. They, you know, they initiate. They bring the fight. And for a while, you know, we've got our Wyatt Earp, our heroes, who are kind of passive, right? Stuff is happening around them. Bad stuff, corrupt stuff is happening around them to the point where, you know, his family is attacked and terrorized, and then you know, they slink off just like complete doormats, right? You know, and just talking, and then I mean, that is like the absolute low point. You're like, oh, why? What's going on? And then, I mean, is there a more dramatic 180 from beta male to alpha male in the history of cinema than when you go from the you know, the stagecoach out of Tombstone to the train station scene? And then from there on, it's just unadulterated alpha male pornography. As I mean, how crazy is it? Like, they're going in there and they're murdering guys who are tripped out on opium, you know, or just right. Sitting in their bed. I mean, it's no, you know, they're not doing showdowns. They're not drawing. They're not doing it. It's just they're going in there and they're committing multiple homicides.
This is cold-blooded.
It is cold. It is cold-blooded. Absolutely.
And it balances things out nicely, even in the beginning, when they're sort of trying to avoid conflict, because you have Doc Holliday through that, still just being a complete badass alpha male through that whole thing.
Right.
Just getting under people's skin.
That's right.
And not backing down from anything and being a smartass, and it's great. Great dialogue.
And an excellent representation of, you know, two friends too. You know, you got your bromance thing going on there, so you know that's very good. And then when it gets time to get the shooting on, you know, you got a special right in the thick of it, you have a special guest appearance by Charlton Heston. You know, just to put the cherry on top there.
I forgot about Charlton Heston.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, it is just like, when they transition to that whole destroy the Cowboys sequence, you know, where they're, you know, they just, the montage of craziness and the music just kicks in and just thunders. I mean, that is just one of the great, like, hells yeah, boys, you know, watch this before the regional football game championship, you know, and get out there and just take someone's head off. So,
and I have to say, you know, you could pretty much come up to me and say, I have a movie. It was made in the 80s or early 90s. Bill Paxton's in it, and he gets killed. Are you interested?
Yes.
And
yes.
Bam. It's like, absolutely, I'm interested.
Yeah.
What it
it's
is.
It's the Paxton factor.
That's right. Yeah. I know. The guy's been killed by a predator, an alien, a Terminator, and a cowboy, I guess, right? Amongst so many other things.
The only thing missing is a pirate.
I'm sure he must have been killed by a pirate at some point in his life. Probably played like, you know, some extra in Peter Pan. You know, that's like in his high school days or something. We'll have to chalk that up. So, but anyway, Tombstone, fantastic, obviously. Blu-ray was disappointing, but we won't get into that. So let's move on to number 11 on our list, and we're going to make this a little more contemporary because obviously we've been dwelling on the 80s and 90s a lot in this first segment. So let's throw a bone to 2010 and take a look, Dan, at The Expendables, speaking of Sly Stallone.
Yes. Yes, a movie I've been dying to talk about.
Yeah, so
since it came out, since it was in theaters.
Now, before people get, you know, before we get any angry emails, which we obviously will not, but, you know, hypothetically speaking, hey, why isn't The Expendables in your top five? Does it get any more Prius enthusiast loathing than this? And, you know, I would say 90 to 95% of that movie probably would be absolute grade A sirloin, but just a few things that have dropped it in the standings a little bit, dropped it in the power rankings, so to speak.
Yes.
The girlfriend scenes.
The girlfriend scene, totally pointless. Totally pointless. yeah, that's true. Like the basketball scene, completely pointless. We never see her again. Who is she played by? Who is the girlfriend played by that I recognize?
Charisma Carpenter.
Absolutely pointless. Never returns after that. So, that's pretty lame. But The Expendables does kind of trespass on some of the, some of the prerequisites we have in place for these movies. So do you want to hit on those first, Dan, or sing the praise?
Sure. Let's get the negatives out of the way first, since there's so much good to say about it. And the big negative is that there's a South American banana republic with a dictator, presumably a communist or left-wing dictator who is then being manipulated by a CIA or ex-CIA operative.
A.K.A. So, the old white man cabal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, now, granted, you know, if you have to have an ex-CIA operative who's a member of the old white man cabal, Eric Roberts, at least, you know, is a little bit of sugar to help the medicine go down for me.
And he's got a pretty decent brute second banana in Stone Cold Steve Austin, right?
Yeah.
And Gary Daniels. Don't forget
Oh, that's
Gary.
True. Yeah. So that's at least he surrounds himself. You know, at least – and they do go all the way to say he's like former CIA, right? He's not like – he hasn't been dispatched by Donald Rumsfeld or anything. Yeah. And then, of course, the Banana Republic is fictional too, right?
Right. Instead of just making it, you know, Hugo Chavez.
That's right. It's like the 24 effect. You know, this last season of 24 where it was the Islamic Republic, you know, which eventually, of course, was doing the bidding of Russia, which is, you know, real and, you know, and whatnot. But still, we don't know. We have to kind of infer what hellhole we're dealing with here. So, but that's kind of what kept it from the high echelon. So anyway, but enough of that. Let's kind of get into the gravy of this. So Steve, we'll let you kick this off as well. Expendables, what does it do for you?
Okay. In, you know, a decade that has brought us stuff like Grindhouse and you know, all these really cheesy, over-the-top homages to, like, 70s exploitation cinema or 80s action movies. One thing, like, even Black Dynamite, as much as I love Black Dynamite, The movie is totally self-aware.
Right.
It's totally tongue-in-cheek. It winks at the audience every chance it gets. Grindhouse, same kind of thing. You know, you got all – it's just so – so self-aware and so almost pretentious about how it wears that whole Grindhouse thing on its sleeve.
Like,
what I love about The Expendables is it just feels like a movie that was made in 1987.
That's right.
It's not winking at us. It's not trying to, like,
it's not being, yeah, it's not like poking, I mean, it's not being condescending towards the genre.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like a clever homage, or it's not an eye-winking, tongue-in-cheek gesture to the 1980s. It is a 1980s movie. It, like, right down to its very... the very fiber of its DNA. It is a red meat, all-blooded American 80s action movie, and there's no bones about it. It's, I said when I first saw it in theater, I came out and I said, basically, that's the most batshit, insane, crazy movie that makes no sense that I've ever seen, but it is awesome. You know,
like, yeah.
You know, they go to, what is it, Veradero or some crazy, you know, what was the place from the Lethal Weapon and Die Hard movies. I don't know, some crazy fictional island somewhere. You know, two of them go. Then they come back to L.A. long enough for a car chase and to beat up someone's
That's right.
ex-boyfriend. And then they go back
and punched off Dolph Lundgren in the face. And
yeah, it makes... Like, the movie makes no sense whatsoever. It's full of logic gaps. It whatever you want to say in terms of, like, trying to attack it intelligently. But, man, when they... crank that action up, do they ever crank that action?
I mean, that, like, you know, the final third of the film is essentially one extended, ridiculous, CGI-free, pyrotechnic happy...
pure carnage.
Pure carnage.
Just pure, unadulterated carnage.
Right.
You know? Like,
and hard R. Hard R carnage, too.
Hard R. And you get a character with an automatic shotgun who shows these unique, invented for this movie, explosive warheads that are fired from this gun. I mean, you know?
Right.
This is...
yeah, that's
this
great.
Stuff, it's gold.
And the great thing about that ending, too, is, you know, you've got all these famous action icons in the movie. And not only is there wall-to-wall carnage for like a half an hour, but it really pays off all these guys being in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And,
you
like,
know,
I mean, no,
really,
no one is waiting.
Jet Li's moment.
Yeah.
You get to see everybody. You know, you get to see really good fights. You know, yeah, the Terry Crews thing with the shotgun. Is just
in Red,
I mean,
Couture,
when I saw it in the theater, man, that theater went crazy.
Yeah,
when they were pinned down, and he showed up, and then
and it was just so damn loud.
Yeah. And is it? Correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't Eric Roberts die by a sword?
I think he actually gets shot several times by Stallone's revolver, and then Statham throws a knife.
It was like a sword though. It was a sword like
it was like a big survival
okay,
knife or
that's
something.
Right. Yes. All right. That may have been like the only CGI, actually. That's possibly it. You know.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times now, and I got to say, every time I see it, I have a hoot. It's just such an enjoyable, fun, you know, nonstop, just chaotic movie.
And it really is. I mean, it's essentially the movie that they set out to make. I think, you know, this.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Really, it's just there's not. Again, they're not being hyper nuanced here. There's not a lot of pretense. It's just let's get together some recognizable, if a little bit weather-beaten faces together here, you know, from the action genre, and just have a good time. So,
and it was just, it was great to see Lundgren kicking ass again. Because that guy is just, he's awesome. I love him.
It's true. I mean, if you...
And he's insane.
Yes.
He is insane.
I mean, come on. They fly a plane with a little hatch in the front that you can pop out of and go to town with machine guns.
Yeah, you turn
awesome.
Your ski goggles and...
Yeah,
I mean, you know what that
keep
movie
the wind out of your eyes.
The movie felt like this kind of patchwork of sequences where they like all they had their actors, they all got them together at like a poker table or something and said, okay, what stuff do you want to do? I think that's where that – I think Statham said, oh, I'd love to beat up some guy with a basketball. So that's probably why that's stupid. Uh-huh. But then it was like Jet Li wants to ride in the back of a pickup truck while it's going 100 miles an hour, you know?
And shooting at someone.
Okay, we'll do that for him. Jason Statham wants to shoot someone from the nose of a plane. Okay, Terry Crews, you know? Played a modified Doom game with a shotgun, automatic shotgun. And use that too. It's like they all had their things. Like another little small disappointment was, and I think it'll probably be rectified on an extended release. But I just wish I had seen more of the Stone Cold Steve Austin Sly Stallone fight where Stallone like broke his neck or something. You know?
Yeah, he had his neck shot.
Yeah, so that was just. I mean, it was cool. It was a little too brief. I'm sure there's lots more footage out there to digest.
I think they paid off for that with the Stone Cold Steve Austin and Randy Couture.
That's true.
That was just
That was bad.
That was well done. Yeah, that was well executed. Like, again, a pretty good. But that was a fiery death for Austin, right? I believe that's how he kind of met his maker. So, yeah. So just, I don't know, just all male id unleashed, I suppose.
And every, like, it's like Dan said, everybody had a moment. You know, like nobody felt wasted. Nothing. It never felt like stunt casting. Everybody had their their little moment to shine. You know.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Other than the fact that when, you know, they were at that table discussing what they wanted to do, apparently an old rerun of Buffy the Vampire Slayer was on in the background. Somebody was like, "Who's that chick? She's hot."
That's right. Put her in the movie. You know? Let's get her in this movie.
Jason Statham's like, "God, she's cute. give her a ring."
And you know, the other thing that I actually liked about the movie, even though, again, it totally fits into what you're saying, Steve. It makes you, like, the very end, where they're just all hanging around, bullcrapping in the garage, you know? It goes on forever. It makes no sense, and it abruptly ends. But for some reason, I'm cool with it. It just feels right.
Yep. It's still awesome.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think that we have reached our halfway point of our countdown here with two very worthy movements, very different. One more grounded, though. You know, I think they both satisfy that great action itch in different ways. And
definitely,
even though one has fewer pyrotechnics perhaps than the other, they're both certainly worth tracking down and seeing for the thousandth time. Perhaps, you know, and for Tombstone it'd be the thousandth time. But the Expendables, I'm sure, will get a lot of repeat viewings from those of you who are sympathetic with our list here. So again, numbers 12 and 11, Tombstone and The Expendables. And we are in the top 10 home stretch here. So join us next week for when we kick off the, I don't know, like we're going to get real. It's going to get real, I guess, testosterone, I guess, is the word of the day. You know,
Chef Boyardee.
It's going to get hardcore pretty soon.
Welcome to the top 10. This shit just got
real. That's right. So put down the New York Times editorial page and buckle up, boys. So with that said, thank you, Steve and Dan. What else is there to say?
Thanks. 10 points easy.